Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21 to nothing in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. I'm getting word from the people from in Major League Baseball that Yoenis Cespedes had three home runs tonight in his game against the Phillies. That's a big spot, and he is only the second Met player, or I think the situation was he's the first Met player. He's the first Met player to do two, three home run games in his career as a Met. So that's pretty big, and so congrats to Yo for that. I mean, that's a big spot. The Mets are up 10-2. On the Philadelphia Phillies. Our friend Ari in Philadelphia is in the building. He lives in Philadelphia, so he went to check out this Mets series, and he saw at least some of those home runs, and we'll have more from... I think he texted me that he was going to get ice cream for his daughter when he hit the third home run, which is, I can imagine that being a disappointment. But still, I mean, it's just a great moment, and just a big spot for the Mets. So we will... get into more baseball way later. Tonight we're going to talk about golf. We have our friends Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut back with us to do the first of our series of golf recaps, and we enjoy that every year. And before we get into this Masters recap, for which we have much to talk about, I do have to catch up on a few other things. I don't normally do this, but these are big stories. So we were off for a week, and then we came back. So our last show was 2 weeks ago. Quite a bit happened over those 2 weeks. And first, among the storylines, North Carolina basketball beats Gonzaga in the national championship game in what I can only describe as an ugly, ugly game. You know, guys missing shots, guys turning the ball over. It was not a good game. Let's just be honest. Like, it got good towards the end. There were some good moments, but North Carolina really was a survivor more than anything in that game. And Gonzaga was just having one of the all-time worst possible shooting halves you'll ever see in college basketball championship game. Pretty bad. But that was the first out of the box. Next, Russell Westbrook, and this is roughly a week later, or to be more accurate, this was on Sunday. He sets a new record for triple-doubles in a season with 42. He beats out Oscar Robertson, who had 41 way back in the 1960s, and... a guy like him with the kind of heart that he has playing the game. I mean, a lot of guys say that he's a chucker. He is a chucker. But he is carrying that Thunder team into the playoffs. And what a moment for him. Really, all that hard work paying off. The former UCLA Bruin and the current Oklahoma City Thunder with 42 triple-doubles. In this season, he has also averaged a triple-double, something that I did not think was going to happen since Oscar Robertson did it in, I believe, that same year. So it's pretty awesome. Oscar Robertson wrote about the moment in an article at theundefeateds.com. And I tell you, it was really a glowing article and very classy by Oscar Robertson. He could not be happier for Russell Westbrook's moment. So that's pretty awesome. And then some hockey news for you guys. Long time. Play-by-play broadcaster for the Los Angeles Kings, Bob Miller, one of my all-time favorite announcers, and he was just a big part of the Big Three in L.A. They're in L.A. sports. Ben Scully, Chick Hearn, and Bob Miller. And I tell you, it was really something pretty dang special. And unfortunately, the reason why he had to retire this year is because he had a lot of health scares. He had two like two health scares. He had a stroke. I think he had two strokes within the course of a year. And with that, he came out of it and said, this is going to be it. I'm going to retire. He didn't do any games for much of the season. And he finally came back to do the final two. He was pretty sharp. He did a great job calling those games. And he and Jim Fox were just a joy to listen to doing the Kings for 27 years. It was really, really great. And it was just sometimes the best thing going with the Kings some years, because the Kings have been pretty bad sometimes. And I'm going to miss that a lot. I mean, not just Bob calling it quits, but the tandem of Bob and Jim were great. Like, I don't know if they were necessarily the best analysts. Were they like they knew the most about hockey or what? But listening to them was fantastic because they really played off each other great. They had such a good sense of humor. And Jim will stay with the Kings, we think. I'll get to that in a moment. But we believe he'll stay with the Kings with a new announcer for the next coming season. Here's who's not staying with the Kings. The coach that carried the Kings to two Stanley Cups. And it happened yesterday, about 5 o'clock. They announced that both coach Daryl Sutter and GM Dean Lombardi were both axed by the Kings. And all they did was carry them to two Stanley Cups and multiple playoff runs in a row. But the last 3 years were not good. Like, they looked bad this year. And they were struggling to score. And it did seem like the team was regressing, and then the team was getting old. And they didn't really have the pieces to rebound from that. But I am still just amazed that, you know, these were basically the best combo that got you to the best Stanley, that got you to the best run of King's success ever. And this is worth firing. So something's happened behind the scenes that I'm just simply not aware of. I can't even imagine why this would not last another year. Very surprising to me, some more or less surprised. And it is true, the Kings have regressed for the last three seasons. There's no doubt about it, but it is stunning anyway, just to think that, you know, these guys couldn't have another couple of years to turn it around. I really think that Daryl Sutter is a great coach, and it's a shame that he had to go that like that. And I'm sure he'll find another job. I mean, he's just got such good acumen. I mean, he's a pain for me, people who cover him. We get it. Like, he's a guy that can be easily perturbed. Reminds me a little bit of Bill Belichick that way, but I'll miss him. He was a character, and life goes on, I guess. Taking the place of the GM spot is Rob Blake, who's already in the organization. He got promoted. And the Kings' Luke Robitaille, who's also in the organization, gets promoted to team president. So it was a pretty tumultuous day for the Kings yesterday. I mean, they lose their longtime announcer. He retires. Then they fire their coach and their GM and two of their other guys who are huge names in Kings history as players ascend to the throne, so to speak, of the general of the front office. So, it's a lot to absorb if you're a Kings fan. So with that, we now go back to the subject of golf. And I'm very happy to really bring about this incredible moment. And I tell you, it's really something when, and I hope these guys can hear me, because it's really something when you see a guy that has really fought for the moment for so long, like Sergio Garcia. And he finally gets his thrill. He finally gets his Masters Championship. It's pretty unbelievable. It's unbelievable in the sense that it looked like he was really on his last legs, and he's really hit. He really was at the end of his rope. And then this year he just put it together. And even when he missed the putt to win the Masters in the 18th hole, they went to the playoff, and he won it anyway. After going toe to toe with Justin Rose the entire final round, after a previous round where there were four guys tied for the lead going in, it was really a competitive Masters this time out, and it's really great to really get this going as we come along. I think Skype's still having problems here with these calls, but let's go ahead and see if everyone's on the line. Let's bring everybody in. John in Connecticut joins us first. John, are you there with us? Hello?
I am. Hi, Dave. I am here, although I did get dropped a couple times, so maybe some gym scenarios to work through, but I'm here for now.
Okay. Mike, are you with us? Mike in North Jersey. Mike? Maybe that's what's going on. Since the new Skype upgrade, John, I cannot get group calls to work right. We had problems in our last show, and I don't know why. I don't think Mike can hear us. I don't know if Mike's calling in. I know I can see him. But It's really weird. I'm going to try to call. Maybe I'll try to call his number and see how's it going. See if I can get him. Because Mike, you there? Hello? Mike? Yeah, I can't get him. So let me do that. I will go hang this up. I don't know. They need to update this app again. So let's hang. I want to take him off the call. Oh, goodness gracious. All right. You are the still, right, John? Yes. Gosh, it's so...
Yeah, I'm here for now, Dave.
Okay. I'm not going to answer him here. What I had to do last time was I had to add the people myself, which is stupid. Because, like, you're supposed to be able to add it as they call it, not the other way around. So I'm actually calling John from Skype. So we're kind of doing it in reverse. We'll see if... Mike, you there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, Vid.
Okay, great. So I think we got everybody now. Yeah, the new Skype update has been a terrible mess. Like, I can't accept group calls now. I have to actually call to set the third guy myself, so it's kind of weird. So welcome to the show, guys. It's been a while. It's been a minute. Hope you guys are doing all right out there. And let's just catch up with you guys. So anyway, this tournament has just been really, really incredible. And let's go back to Mike for a sec. It's pretty much everything you could have asked for. I know that we've had years past where the Masters was a runaway and there was really not much juice. This is the complete opposite of that. It was just really great for maybe even three rounds. It was so good. And I realize it started with Charlie Hoffman with a big lead. I don't think anyone thought that he was a serious contender, but he did last a while. So that was interesting. And then it ended with that duel with Rose and with Garcia. It's pretty exciting. So, Mike, we'll give it to you first. I mean, your thoughts as we look at a Masters that really wound up being pretty entertaining.
Well, Dave, I just wanted to point out that I got a text from you last week asking about, if I was going to be able to do the show. And you said, your last text to me said, Dustin looks good this year. He could really win it. And sure enough, it's one of the most bizarre stories that you will ever hear, that he allegedly falls down the stairs, injures his back, and misses the Masters. So that's right up there with some of the epic vid mushes of all time. Oh, Dustin's going to win this year. Looks good, fellas. No, he's gone. He's not even going to play. This is the second time since the World Golf Rankings came out, only the second time in 31 years that the world number one has not played in the Masters.
Unbelievable.
So just you got your power back. You should probably say that, Rob Blake and Luke Robitaille are going to be a complete disaster and might mush the Kings into another dynasty. But, yeah, really exciting tournament. Of course, the opening round, with the high winds and, it's kind of a crazy leaderboard. I agree with you. Charlie Hoffman and William McGirt, you saw it after the first round. You're like, what is this, the Career Builder Challenge? This is the Masters. But, everything kind of evened itself out, and we got a nice little duel on the back nine on Sunday. So, finally the long-awaited major for Sergio Garcia. And I guess we can get into more things about it, but I would just say that, it was nice to see a little bit of a redemption story. And it was also just, it's funny to see how Sergio's reputation has changed so much. He came onto the scene, he wasn't popular with the fans, and the fans were really behind him on that Sunday. And it also seems that, especially with the European players, that everyone seems to like Sergio. And all you heard about was that Sergio was his, like, spoiled brat and stuff. So, good for him. I'm happy he won. It's unfortunate Dustin Johnson didn't play. But, who knows? With that wind in that crazy wind in the first few rounds, you never know what was going to happen. And it really, he missed some putts down the stretch. But it really was just a... except for that first shot on 13, really was a, tremendous display of ball striking by Sergio Garcia. I mean, if you go from like 15 on, he basically stuck every single pin going in. So it's just tremendous. Justin Rose was there with him, but, ran into some trouble on the 17th hole. And, both of those guys are suspect putters at times anyway, so I don't think that really surprised anyone if we wanted to get into missed short putts and stuff. That's going to happen, especially at Augusta National. But just an exciting back nine to the Masters, so that's always good to see. And I guess we're off to a good start with the majors this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a way to begin the major season in golf. Let's go to John in Connecticut for some other thoughts on the ascent to the championship for Sergio Garcia and some of the other big players as we entered that final round on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a quick note on Dustin Johnson. I mean, you know, he has quote-unquote back issues. I mean, would it really surprise anyone if he kind of fell off the wagon again the night before the tournament? I mean, I don't know. I mean, he definitely has that history in the past, but we'll see if he's going to be back on the course. I guess his next event will be the tournament in Charlotte next month. But as for Garcia, I'm happy that he won. You know, it was certainly a long time coming. He's really had at least a good chance to win, I'd say, three or four majors over the years. You remember that putt against Patrick Harrington in the British Open, where he could have won there. Obviously, the PGA in '99 when he first broke on the scene against Tiger, and there's a couple more in there that he was right in the mix to win and just came up short. And finally, he came through down the stretch. He really thought he was kind of leaking oil there to start the back nine after with the bogeys on 10 and 11, and then the tee shot on 13 takes the unplayable lie. And of course, you know, some viewer called in to see if the ball moved when he was doing something in the pine needles. I mean, that would have been a huge disgrace if, you know, if he had lost after they took off another couple strokes, like what happened to Lexi Thompson in the LPGA event. But anyway, that was that was good that they didn't deduct any more strokes. But you know, that was really the changing point of the match, is how he takes the unplayable lie from the trees, lays up, and then somehow gets up and down for par. And that really kind of steadied things, and he was able to play some good golf down the stretch. So again, you know, he held the title, I guess, of the best player in the world not to win a major, so he can cross that off his list. I guess I don't know who we would go to next at this point for that title. Maybe Lee Westwood, I guess, but I don't know. Maybe we can talk about that more after. But yeah, it was an exciting duel. I guess a little disappointed that the group of Spieth and Fowler didn't do much of anything. I mean, they were out of it by the fifth hole. You knew Charlie Hoffman and Ryan Moore weren't going to do anything to challenge the lead. So you were just kind of left with this great duel down the back nine. And, you know, the ratings weren't very good, but I thought it was really entertaining golf. Justin Rose has to be kicking himself. I mean, he could have made that putt on 17. That was not a hard putt that he missed for par. And then obviously on 18, just slightly misread it. And then, you know, hits the tee shot in the playoff that pretty much sealed his fate. So all in all, a very exciting event. You know, you'd like to see the winner right around, you know, 10 under, and they were 9 under par. So that's some good stuff right there. And, you know, again, Sergio finally gets his major, and it seems like he's matured over the years. I remember that after that tournament with Harrington, you know, he was like, oh, you know, what was me? You know, other people won't get that break hitting the flag, but you know, that's just the kind of stuff that happens to me. And he's just seems like he's kind of matured since then, and, you know, everyone likes him. And, you know, he was due, and I'm glad to see that he won it.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the story a couple other times, and actually last year with Dustin Johnson was a good example. That guy that just could never get through, but he had the talent. And this is another good example of that. And when you're that good, you just hope that at some point, you know, things just come together, and this was that moment. But what's interesting is that on the 18th hole, when he missed that putt to win the Masters outright, right there, it made you think, like, oh, man, is he going to do it again? But, you know, because even Rose was, like, burying his head as he was lining up for the putt, and it looked like it was about a 3-footer. It might have been like a 5-footer. And he just thought he was done, but then he missed the putt. And then at that point, I wondered myself, like, is this going to be it? But, you know, my instinct was, guys, I said, you know what, this might not be it. Like, this is probably not going to do him in. We'll see what happens in the playoff, and surely enough, he recovered. And I think Rose was the one who ended up making the mistake on the playoff hole. So I'm just going to ask John the same. I mean, I'm going to ask Mike and John the same question. Mike, when Sergio missed that putt, did you think, here we go again? Or did you think, you know what, he missed the putt, but maybe we'll see what happens?
I didn't think he was done, just because when he lined up that putt, he aimed it so far out right. Now, he says the break left. If anything, it broke a little bit to the right. Now, maybe I played Tiger Woods PGA Tour, the Masters, whatever the last edition of it, to come out too many times that I know that. But I looked at that, and I like yelled at the TV, "You're aimed too far right. What are you doing?" And sure enough, the putt goes right and breaks a little bit to the right. So if he had like fanned the putt or pushed it out right, then maybe I would have said, okay, he's done here. But, you know, Justin Rose had a good chance too. He missed. So I said, well, you got both guys missing short putts here. Now, if the playoff had gone past that, because it goes 18, 10, 18, and they just play those two holes, which kind of makes sense because 18, you know, the preferred shot off the tee is a cut. 10, obviously, you have to hit a draw. One hole's downhill, the other's uphill. So I get it. It's like a contrast in holes. But the 18th was going to favor Sergio's ball flight. So, no, I didn't think he was done going in. But, you know, if he had lost and missed that putt, you know, having that putt to win, it would have been a little bit tough to take for him. And even to John's point about how he's matured, even a few years ago, he was saying, I don't have the stuff that it takes to win a major. So, yeah, he's come a long way in a few years. But, no, it was just a bad read on 18, and he got a chance to redeem himself.
Okay, very good. And yeah, it's true. I mean, it was just he just simply misread it. Like, it seemed like a misread for sure. John, what was your takeaway on that hole? Did you think that he still was in it even after missing that putt?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with Mike. You could just tell right off the putter face that that's where he was aimed. He just completely, you know, for a professional golfer who's probably played that hole hundreds of times and they had the charts and everything else. And even Nick Faldo said it right off the, you know, right off the bat. I mean, that was just a horrible, horrible read. And then they showed the crowd that the Mongo behind him with his hands up. Like, that guy probably played that hole like 30 times. And he was like, Sergio, what are you doing, dude? So, yeah, I didn't think he was completely done. I mean, if he had just like shanked his putter, like completely went to the right or whatever, then I would have said, okay, like there was some nerves there, but it was just a pure misread. And he'd been striking the ball so well. I didn't think anything of that putt. I thought he had a good chance to win it still.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to get the sense that I think more than just a few of us were feeling this way. It's just a matter of how you do it. And, this didn't seem like a case where, you know, like he yacked it or anything. He just didn't know, you know, it just like you guys are saying, like he just didn't aim right. And, he was doing everything else well. So why wouldn't you have another shot at it? And you're going to play the same hole anyway. So, I mean, it would be fairly easy to recover in that situation. It's interesting that the playoff ended after one hole, but at the same time, you know, that's what golf is. Like, golf is about who can break first and who can be the one to, you know, withstand the pressure. And that's remarkable that he was able to do that in this time around. You guys mentioned, I think it was the 15th hole, Andy in Seattle on Twitter referenced the guy that wrote him off completely on Twitter. Not Andy, but this other guy, that one of the golf guys, completely wrote off Sergio after that miss. And it's funny to see that get bounced and thrown right back in his face. And that's why the thing about golf that's really funny, it's like you can't assume anything's over when it's over. And yet I still make the mistake time after time, and I'm sure others do as well. So let's get it back into the tournament and look at some of the other guys who are big players. And I'm kind of wondering, where do we start? We start with like the guys who were pleasant surprises, or do we do the disappointment? Because I think we're going to have a lot of disappointments this year. But surprises first. Let's get into it. We'll go back to Mike. Who are the guys that stepped it up that you were very pleasantly surprised to see? Who were the big performers this time around?
Well, we've, you know, been talking about him, but, you know, if you were going to ask me, oh, if Sergio Garcia is going to get a major, which one is it going to be? I would not have said the Masters, because he does not really have a good history here. I think his best finish ever was fourth, and that was quite a long time ago, if I believe I'm correct about that. But, you know, someone can double check me, and if I need a fun house, I need a fun house, so be it. Pleasantly surprised. I should bring up this one player, because I would say he was both surprising and disappointing at the same time. You know, Thomas Peters, if he didn't have like a couple implosions on the back nine on Thursday and Saturday, he would have been right in this thing too. And, you know, we all know this guy has a lot of talent. They put him on the European Ryder Cup team because they think that he's going to turn into one of the top players in the world. And I can kind of see that happening. You know, very long player, a terrific iron game. So it was a little bit surprising to see him right in the mix in his first Masters, but a little bit disappointing too. What else was surprising? Well, obviously our early round leaders, but you know, with the win like that, that kind of throws a big curveball into anything. And we've kind of seen, they say that the best players, that allow the wind allows them to come through. I don't know if that's necessarily true in today's game, especially in a course like Augusta National, if you throw in winds like that, because it changes the entire way you have to play the course and the normal attributes that you would kind of say favor players at Augusta National. So, yeah, to see Charlie Hoffman, you know, leading the Masters and to have that first round 65, which really was just an incredible score. He beat the scoring average that day by 10 strokes. So that was incredible to see, but I don't think anyone was surprised. You know, William McGirt being in it early, too. The guy's in his first Masters. He's got one career PGA Tour win, so that was a little bit surprising to see both of them. Who else? See, the thing is, like, a lot of guys were in it, but a lot of people kind of backed their way into it. Like, you see Paul Casey, but yeah, that was a backdoor top 10. Kevin Chappell, another backdoor top 10. Charles Schwartzel, a backdoor top 5. So, I don't know. There were some pleasant surprises here, but I think the guys at the top, you know, Sergio, yes, a little bit surprising, but he had been playing well this year. Justin Rose, I don't think anyone's surprised by that. Jordan Spieth obviously was in it until that, you know, just a disaster of a final round, which we'll get into. No one was surprised by that. Adam Scott was in it going into the final day. No one's surprised by that. So not many, really. It was a good leaderboard, a good mix of players up there. So I guess Thomas Peters, you know, really just if he had been able to hold it together a little bit, would have been right there. So I guess I was pleasantly surprised by him.
Yeah, Peters was definitely right there in the running for, I don't know, about a day and a half or something like that. So it was certainly something to see. Let's go to John for his look at the surprises of the Masters tournament. And just overall, who were you impressed by this time around?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could say it was a surprise to see Charlie Hoffman at the top of the leaderboard on Thursday, but that's kind of like his whole career. I mean, that's what he does. He gets out to those nice starts and then really can't sustain it through Sunday. You knew he wasn't going to threaten the lead, although he did kind of hang in there. I mean, he was in the third to last group, but ultimately just kind of fell apart. But, you know, that was a very impressive round. I got to give it to him. I mean, he just putted lights out, which was, you know, basically gave him his 65. I mean, an average putting round, he probably would have been 200 or 300, but he just made just a ton of putts. But that's what you have to do to shoot a low score. So good for him on that. I mean, we're talking about backdoor top 10, top fives. I mean, I said it the other day, Matt Kuchar, he's the king of the backdoor, you know, top 10, top five, what have you. I mean, seriously, can either of you name a time when he seriously contended for a major? You can't. I was thinking about it the other day. I cannot think of a time when, like, he was in the final group or, you know, coming down in the back nine, having a chance to win a major. But yet he's always, you always see his name pop up there, you know, tied for eighth, tied for fifth, you know, third place. That's what he does. He kind of hangs around even par and then has that one nice stretch of golf, and he gets in there for a top five. And he finishes tied for fourth, has the unbelievable hole in one. So, you know, I guess good for him. He took home a lot of cash, and I'm sure he made a lot of fantasy golf players who picked him happy. But again, it's such the definition of a backdoor top 10. I mean, I hadn't seen one shot at him all week, and all of a sudden, here he is, you know, finishes in fourth place. But so that was definitely a backdoor top 10. I agree about Peters. I didn't expect much from him. This course is not very kind to people who play it for the first time, which is why you never hardly ever see rookies do well here, which is why it was so incredible to see Spieth and his performance when he came here for his first appearance. Even though he didn't win, he had a great shot at it. I guess we could kind of say a lot of people were picking John Rahm this week. Well, you know, I was not one of them because of that very reason. I mean, you need to have experience reading these greens, you know, knowing where to miss the shots. That's why you see Fred Couples, you know, his back gives out by Sunday, you know, every year. But still, he knows how to play the course, and he's long enough that he can, if he makes some putts, he can get around pretty well. And up until the 15th hole on Saturday, when he made a double bogey and then he bogeyed 16, he was right in there. So Good job by him. I wouldn't really say that was a huge surprise. He, like I said, usually plays this course pretty well. Let's see who else here. As for guys, maybe we're going to go disappointments after. So I guess I'll hold on for that. But yeah, I mean, I guess if I'm just looking at the top 10, the two guys there that, you know, if you said to me, who is this, would you be surprised if this guy finished top 10 at the beginning of the week? I would be surprised to say Peters definitely, and then Kevin Chappell, kind of coming out of nowhere to get that top 10. But again, four under on Sunday, it's kind of a backdoor scenario. But hey, he gets to come back next year, and tied for seventh probably made him a hefty amount of cash. So I guess those would be my surprises for the tournament.
You know, I'll tell you, as Freddie Couples goes, usually he's faded and completely out of it by the third round. He had some staying power more than usual this year, so all the credit in the world to him for lasting into the fourth round. The guy's pretty old at this point, so I mean, good on him for being able to play the course so well overall. So let's go back to Mike, and now we chat about the disappointments of this year's Masters tournament. And Mike, we'll give it to you. Take it away.
Well, real quickly, I guess a surprise. Larry Mize managed to make the cut again, and I was just looking it up real quickly. He is ranked currently ranked number 1009 in the world. He has not played a competitive tournament besides the Masters anywhere that has any status anywhere since 2008.
Wow.
So I don't know how this guy is making the cut at the Masters, and he's made the cut now three of the last 4 years. So really,
yeah,
that's just incredible. The guy...
Yeah, he shows up every year and makes the cut, like one tournament a year. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's not playing competitive golf anywhere besides this, so it's kind of incredible to see. Disappointments. Let's see. Bubba Watson, well, he's kind of been playing terribly this year anyway, but just seeing him on Thursday, first of all, he looks like he's so thin right now, it's scary. And just to come out here and show absolutely no form on a course that basically he owned a few years ago, I mean, he was terrible. What a joke that was. Jordan Spieth, we have to be very disappointed with that that final round, 75, making like three birdies in a row to end. So that was really worse than a 75. You know, he tried to put a positive spin on it, saying, oh, I was proud of the way that I finished. Yeah, get lost, Jordan. I mean, you basically blew yourself out of the tournament. And let's be honest, he wasn't going to keep up the pace that he was playing at anyway, and no one can do that. He could have won the Grand Slam a couple of years ago. But it seems like since he put that first ball into the water on 12 last year, kind of his aura about him has been shattered a little bit. Even though tee to green, he's probably playing better than he was 2 years ago. I think he's third on the PGA Tour in greens and regulation. So, you know, I was thinking, oh, it looks like Spieth might have this again going into Sunday, and he just shows absolutely nothing. So terrible job by him on Sunday. Though he's still young, so a lot's left to be. A lot more is left for him, obviously. Phil Mickelson, who really just, he looked terrible on Friday. But you know, I don't want to kill him too much because Phil Mickelson's old. You know, they can keep trying to spin this on the Golf Channel that he's not old and that he's, you know, playing close to what he was. Well, maybe he did at the British Open last year, but let's be honest, he's older than Jack Nicklaus was when he won the Masters in 86. So he's old, and I think we kind of know that it's going to be hard for him to be consistently good at this point. Who else was disappointing? Danny Willett, I guess, is defending champion, even though he hasn't shown much form. It seemed like he had a pretty good round on Thursday, and then he just blew up on Friday, so that was a little bit disappointing. I think he'd want to get at least to the weekend as defending champion. Anyone else really stick out to me as a big disappointment? Besides the obvious Dustin Johnson thing. Now, I don't want to speculate too much, but it would be a very good way to make him, if he did fall off the wagon and like they knew he was doing cocaine, because he's been suspended multiple times for cocaine. They just didn't officially say so. It would be a good way for him to save face, to come out there, swing a club at half speed a few times and say, well, I can't play. So who knows what actually happened, though, but I'm sure he didn't just slip down the stairs. I mean, that just sounds ridiculous. How are you a professional athlete, you're that coordinated, and you fall down the stairs? Give me a break. I'm not believing that. let's see. Terrell Hatton, he'd been kind of an under-the-radar kind of guy that I think people who follow golf pretty closely were kind of knowing about off his performance in the majors last year. And 80-78, so that was terrible. Although I doubt, maybe his first or second time playing the majors, but still 80-78 for him, that's no good. Anyone else? I guess, Patrick Reed, I had heard that he had played Augusta National several times before he was a professional, and his worst score was 69. Well, this guy can't do anything at the Masters, and I guess the course is set up to be much easier throughout the year. Nothing again from him on a course that apparently he had done pretty well at. You know, he went to college at Augusta State, so he kind of figured that he might be made for that course a little bit, or at least they tried to spin it that way, but he did nothing. Henrik Stenson, bad performance for him, but he doesn't really play that well at Augusta anyway, so I wasn't really shocked. I guess he's kind of the biggest name guy not to do much. You mentioned Bubba Watson, but that's just because of his form there. Anyone else? I thought Zach Johnson would have done a little bit better in those tough conditions early, but you know he's getting old too. So I guess that's it. There weren't really the big disappointment was Dustin Johnson just not being able to tee off. But in terms of players, there really weren't that many that stood out.
Well, I think that speaks to just how generally competitive it was, too. I mean, I think certainly there's always going to be some disappointments in every Masters and every tournament that you'll see on out there in the tour and in these events as well. It was certainly more. I think I always felt like more guys performed to or exceeded their expectations than didn't. Although, granted, I mean, I guess I don't really know exactly what the percentage would be in that situation. I thought it's very interesting that you point out that Dustin Johnson's injury may have a little bit of sketchy details behind it. You're calling shenanigans on it, and you're not the first to do that. And I think it's very interesting to see whether something else about the incident comes out later on. We'll find out later. We'll find out for sure down the road. Let's go to John now and get your take out of the disappointments in this year's Masters tournament. And certainly, Dustin Johnson would qualify as one of them. So, John, let's give it to you now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree. I was surprised about Spieth, especially after, you know, he puts himself in that great position on Saturday, and he looked like he had his game in control, and he just completely had nothing on Sunday. I mean, hitting it all over the place, couldn't make a putt. And yeah, okay, he birdies the last three holes, but I mean, you know, he was six or seven over for the day at that point. So, I mean, it was just a hollow finish. So that was definitely surprising to me, how he played that final round. I guess in terms of the best players that missed the cut, you know, Stenson hasn't played well now for a couple months. So, you know, I'm not going to say I was terribly surprised by that. Although, you know, his ball striking is usually on point, and he just had nothing this weekend. Similar to Terrell Hatton, and people were high on the other Englishman, Tommy Fleetwood, and he went 78-74, missed the cut. Hatton had, he didn't play well at the match play. He didn't make it out of the group stage. Before that, he had something like four or five straight top tens in stroke play events. So I was definitely surprised by his 80-78. It just goes to show you, how hard it is for a first timer to come here and play. And obviously, you know, he could have still missed the cut and shot a little bit better than that. But I think he's a very emotional player, and he probably just got so mad at himself, as the day went along, and he just couldn't recover. But he's definitely someone to watch out for going forward if you can kind of get that, you know, in check, and he's definitely got the ability. In terms of other surprises, I mean, there really isn't much to say. Let me see here. Well, here's another surprise that I failed to mention before. So this dude, the low amateur, he's like some 30-year-old like stockbroker or something from New York. Did I hear that right? He's like the mid amateur champion. Usually it's like some young college guy, but this guy won like the mid amateur, and he gets to play at the at the Masters, and he's like some big wig financial guy. It could be, you know, it could be someone we know, but you know, playing the Masters, right, LT scenario, getting low am at the Masters. But yeah, so that was pretty interesting. Like, he's just a normal dude that plays at a country club, and you know, he is obviously a really good player. So that's been a thrill of a lifetime. I was pretty surprised by that. But other than that, I mean, no real, other major disappointments to mention.
John, when you think about the journey of a high amateur winner in the Masters, you get the full Butler cabin treatment. You get the presentation with Jim Nance and who that guy's name is, Hootie and the Blowfish or whatever his name was. I forgot his name, but the guy that's president of the Masters. Of Augusta National, and I don't know if they give him a green jacket. I think they did. So it's almost like you won the Masters in a way. Like, the High Amateur Award is pretty awesome. Like, they really do a lot for the guy who has the highest amateur score. So what a journey that is. That's pretty awesome, all told. I tell you, it certainly was a very memorable tournament. Mike, why were the ratings so low? I mean, maybe this is not a question any of us are going to know. But I am surprised to hear the TV ratings are low, if that's what John said, and I think it is. So, I mean, it was a very competitive tournament this year. You had some pretty big names. It is surprising to me that, maybe just because there's two European guys that were in the mix at the end, but that would be a very stupid reason to not watch. But then again, this is America, I guess. So, but anyway, would you have any possible explanation as to why the ratings could have been lower than you would have expected?
I did read an article about this, and it tied it into saying that sports ratings across the board are kind of down anyway, and that there tend to be fluctuations in them. That Sergio Garcia and Justin, they said that the ratings during like the last hour of coverage picked up significantly.
Okay.
But that the guys, like, once that like Spieth fell off and Fowler fell off, that people probably tuned out a little bit. Especially people that aren't really golf fans, because it said that, everyone who's a golf fan knows who Sergio is. They know who Justin Rose is. But people that aren't golf fans don't necessarily know who they are, and neither are Americans. So who knows, you know? I don't really have a good explanation for it. They tried to say that the digital platforms or the streaming and stuff didn't have an effect on it. I'm not exactly sure about that. You know, I found myself using that a little bit more often and, you know, almost like not hand waving the TV, but like not watching it as much as I would, honestly. So I'm not sure exactly. It's probably an overall trend. There probably is the Tiger effect, but because we know he just draws people in who, you know, he's so great for the game, but all the people that watch him and only watch him don't have any appreciation for golf for some reason and have never been inspired to go pick up a club and, you know, hit some shots. So much good he's going to do for the game when he's gone. What are we going to be doing, covering the senior tour like it's more important than it's the regular tour? Like, I'm getting off on a tangent now, but I'm not sure exactly why it's the lowest ratings in, what, since 2004? And no one's really sure exactly. It could be a trend of where golf's going. I don't know. We'll have to see how the other majors play out in terms of ratings, and we got to see who's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I noticed as far as Masters digital coverage, and this is actually a compliment to the Augusta National Golf Club, but they have set up such a great system with that Masters online coverage, except for the fact that they don't cover very many actual holes, but at least in the final two rounds, what they did this year was they added another panel for the actual game telecast. I mean, sorry, game. For the actual broadcast. So you could actually watch the broadcast online, which is a huge help during those first two rounds because ESPN is completely useless with their watch ESPN on the desktop. And when you're on the iPad or whatever, it's fine. But when you're on the computer, their watch ESPN application is terrible. Like, it's so bad. It's so outdated. So the Masters added a broadcast outlet. Now, what I don't know about it, though, is whether they actually had the actual ESPN guys and the actual ESPN telecast or not. But it said broadcast. So I put it on. I'm like, yeah, this is covering all the broadcast stuff. So I thought that was pretty neat. Mike, maybe you can speak to that before I give it to John. But I think these advancements are great, but there is certainly risk with it that it could take away from the regular television viewership. I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are, but it's certainly significant. It's a significant factor. So, yeah, Mike, when you were watching those streams, did you check out that broadcast app, that broadcast panel on there on masters.com?
Not particularly closely. When I use the Masters Online thing, a lot of times I'll just go to the Amen Corner thing and or do 15 and 16. That's really where I stick with that. So
okay.
I don't know. It's like, let me watch a hole, and it's more like, you know, the experience you'd get if you go to a golf tournament live. You know, you'll stay at a hole for a while and watch players go through. So that's really what I that's more what I focus to when I use the Masters on their coverage on the internet. So
yeah, it's a good use of it too. I was using it for just that purpose when Hoffman was entering Amen Corner, and I cannot remember if it was the first round or second round, but on one of the two rounds, he was going in, and then Sergio was going in with another group, and I'm like, oh, they're all coming in, and then we got to watch and see what happened, and I think that was the point where Hoffman was starting his first slide, because he went up to -8 that day, and so this was round two then, because he was already up to -8, and then he tanked, like he went all the way back down, and then at the end of the day, it was a four-way tie, and everybody was at -4, so it was pretty wild, and it was about that point where things really started going south, so I thought it was interesting, because we didn't see Charlie at all on TV until they got to Amen Corner, and the way that the Masters schedules things, it's not necessarily based on where you finished the day before, ergo, he was just teeing off early in the morning, and I'm like, man, I'm like, I barely get up, and he's already done with like three holes, and so we didn't really see, nobody actually saw him play until he got to Amen Corner, and then we put on the Amen Corner on the app, and that was really when I started to see what was going on. And, you know, typical Charlie Hoffman. He's just sort of missing little chip shots and whatever. So it's certainly been very useful, the online coverage over the years. Anyway, let's go back to John. And what was I going to ask you about? Oh, yeah, the TV ratings and the online coverage. Yeah, what do you think could have contributed to the lower ratings this year?
It's tough to say because, I mean, they're definitely offering more in terms of the coverage, you know, the you know, Amen Corner 15 and 16 featured groups they offer this year. But they've been offering that for the last, I want to say, at least 5 years. So this is nothing new. I mean, and it's not like it's one of those things where, you know, you could completely watch the whole event online. But like, who would want to do that anyway? So it's hard to say. I mean, I guess it was one of those things. Maybe people were really watching for Spieth and Fowler, and once they kind of faded on the front nine, they tuned out, and maybe they got a text from a buddy or something, you know, saying, hey, well, this is, you know, looking really good down the stretch, or they put it on with like an hour to go, and they got to watch the great finish. So I don't know. I'm not going to read too much into it. We'll see, you know, how the rest of the year looks with who's in contention and how those ratings turn out. But it's difficult to say why this one was so much lower. I mean, it's not like you had, you know, Charlie Hoffman and Ryan Moore, you know, with the duel. I mean, these are two world-class players that even the casual golf fan should know just from watching, you know, the Ryder Cup and, you know, major events. Justin Rose has won a major. Sergio, of course, has been around for a long time and has a lot of history. So, you know, difficult to say why they were low. I guess we'll have to see how the rest of the majors play out this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's too bad. I think it was certainly deserving of a better rating than it got just because it was a very, very engaging event this time around. It was engaging really every round, and I can't say that most of the time when I watch any golf major. So I will say that as far as staging the tournament, Augusta did a very good job this year. One other note I'm going to bring up, and it is the passing of Arnold Palmer over the last few months. And that meant that he was no longer present at the inaugural tee shot. And that's a sad moment. I mean, you know, he was part of it for years and years and years and years. And Mike hinted at this possibility last year when he did not actually do the tee shot with Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus. And it was a sign of things changing. And unfortunately, they did change. And, you know, I think the golf world is still a little bit beaten about the loss of Arnold Palmer. Certainly, you see the Masters. You can't think of it without them. So definitely something different. So with that in mind, we can comment on that too, Mike. But I was also going to ask you about the television coverage this year by CBS. You know, generally, I don't have a lot to complain about when it comes to these things. I mean, I realize that Dottie Pepper's not that great when she does her interviews, but nevertheless, I mean, I thought it was pretty solid. So that was my opinion. Let's see what you had to say about CBS and their coverage of the Masters tournament this year.
One thing I'll say about CBS, and especially when this kind of accentuates it a little bit more going to the Masters because McCord is banned from the Masters, that without now that Faraday's gone, without Faraday and McCord, like it just seems like the whole broadcast is way too serious. I don't know. Those two were always good for, like, you know, a few lighthearted moments. Sometimes it would get a little bit out of hand, but, you know, it would strike a good balance. Without them, it's just, and, you know, it's like, I don't complain about it because we all know that it's going to happen, but it's like they do constantly kiss Augusta National's ass, and it's like they're clearly getting things from, like, producers and stuff telling them, say this, say that. Everything that's said there on the broadcast, like, has to be approved by basically the hierarchy of Augusta National. And the whole thing is basically a big, you know, it's presented in the way that they want it to be presented. So, but, you know, we all know what that is. I think we're all used to it at this point. It's just like, whatever. Honestly, I turn the sound down a lot now when I watch golf or I'll, like, have music on or something. Because, you know, it's like sometimes the commentary doesn't add very much. But, yeah, Dottie Pepper, you know, she was better than she was last year. But it's just like she's not as good as Faraday or McCord. And, you know, really, why is McCord banned for saying it's like someone bikini waxed the greens? I mean, is that really that big of a deal? I mean, enough's enough already. Just let them come back to the Masters. You know, you're going to let women into the club now. You can let frickin' McCord back to cover the holes because the greens are bikini waxed. And apparently, I read this today that they will not refer to the front nine and the back nine because they're afraid that someone will, like, make a backside joke or an anal sex joke regarding the back nine, so the Masters committee doesn't want that mentioned on the broadcast. So it's just, like, shit like that that's so stupid. It's like, who cares? Just have fun with it. But, you know, it does seem like there are a lot of Captain No Funds in that group there, but you can't really complain about the coverage. Although, I think the one thing we need to talk about is, yeah, it's 2017. Get the coverage on a little bit early. It cannot be starting at 3 o'clock on Thursday and Friday. It's just way too late.
Yeah.
You know, so much has gone on by then. So many storylines are already set in place, and it didn't happen this year, thankfully. But I said, like, with Spieth in 2015, by the time we got into the coverage on Friday, the fucking tournament was over. Basically. So yeah. It's like, I don't know why they sit around and run the risk of that happening. And I don't know why they don't showcase the front nine a little bit more. Cause by the time they get started with that coverage, it's so late in the round that everyone who's out there, is on to the back nine anyway. So it's just this thing that they have where it's almost like they just try to limit it a little bit to, like, build up this aura of exclusivity, and just they try to, like, I don't know, there's no point of it anymore, really. I don't see, at least. It's just started a little bit earlier. Let us see the front nine a little bit more, and, you know, just get with it. If any, I assume they could make more money if they offer more coverage hours, so why not have that be your philosophy? Because that definitely appeals to the people that run that place, is money. And Arnold Palmer, yeah, you know, I hate to say this, but it was pretty obvious that his health was failing last year. You know, it can't be understated how much this guy meant to the game of golf. If you look at participation rates from before and after, basically he had already won a major by 1960, but he won the 1960 U.S. Open. It really brought golf into the mainstream. People started playing golf. If you look at the amount of courses that were built, like, between 1960 and 1970, it's just ridiculous the effect that this guy had. He was basically, you know, you had Hogan and Snead before that, but still in the 1950s, golf was still a little bit small time. But really, you know, Palmer brought it into the mainstream. And, you know, for all the talk about how much Tiger, the effect that Tiger Woods had, you know, Palmer really had a much, you know, Tiger Woods was a better player, but Palmer is without a doubt, like the probably the single most influential golfer of all time, I would say.
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. I mean, what he was able to do and the fact that, you know, he made the most out of the medium of television was a huge factor in the explosion of golf's popularity during those years. So major props to him, and may he rest in peace. And speaking of guys who are leaving us, but not leaving permanently, just leaving the broadcast booth, Vern Lundquist had his last Masters tournament, and as far as we know, that is his last assignment for CBS Sports. Not a lot was made about that. I find that interesting. Maybe I just missed it, but it was interesting. Not only that, I really didn't hear much from him. And granted, he only does like two holes anyway, but it's interesting to see that that's how his career ends, kind of without really knowing much about it. It just kind of did the holes, and that was that. And so I did find that interesting. But I'm gonna miss Vern. I mean, he had some incredibly iconic Masters moments that he was a part of. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, Jack Nicklaus was a big part of that, you know, winning the Masters at 43 years old. I think it was 43. And he was the one who did the hole. He said, yes, sir. You know, that was pretty exciting. And then Tiger Woods in 2005 and, with that incredible chip shot. So it's not going to be the same without Vern, but, you know, maybe another, because he was a kind of a folksy guy. He is a folksy guy. He has a great sense of humor. And I think, Mike, it's just another step in that direction. It's just going to get that much more serious the next year because he's leaving, and he's as folksy as it gets. So that's going to be a loss for television for sure. So let's go to John and get his thoughts on the Masters telecast. And any thoughts from your end?
Yeah, I mean, they do a good job for the most part. You know, definitely the weak link of the team is Dottie Pepper. You know, she has a little difficulty sometimes with, I guess, the transition, you know, if they're going to commercial break or just with some of the calls, she's a little lagging, but she's fairly new doing it. And, you know, again, you only get her on what, one hole or 13th. So, I mean, it's not a huge deal, but she's definitely the weak link of the team, I would say. You know, Ian Baker Finch is still just way too like nauseatingly positive about everything, but I mean, that's just who he is. So, I mean, there's nothing much we can do about that. You know, the rest of the team, I mean, they are what they are. I mean, Nance is just, you know, he's just perfect for this role. And, you know, Faldo has gotten much, much better since he started this. And obviously it helps that he does, you know, early round coverage on the Golf Channel, excuse me, for mostly every event now. So he's definitely stepped up his game. So, yeah, I mean, CBS, they're probably the best crew going. But, Dave, it's interesting you brought that up about Vern. I did not know that was his last, you know, telecast for anything. And you're right. They really should have made more of a big deal out of that if that was true. Yeah, I know he got rid of the FCC football duties, but I thought he was still going to be doing, you know, basketball and the Masters for you know, the foreseeable future, but apparently not. I'm surprised that they didn't mention anything. But, and I completely agree with Mike about the early coverage. I mean, you know, listen, I mean, okay, you don't want to come on at 9 a.m. on Thursday. I get it, but at least get something on TV at noon. I mean, it's just, you know, the half 50% of the field is pretty much done by the time you come on the air, maybe even more than that. So, you know, they definitely can, it's, you know, just one of those things that, you know, well, we're Augusta National, we're the Masters. We can make people wait till 3 o'clock to come on TV. So it's just going to be like that until, you know, until someone, I guess, maybe throws them a load of cash to broadcast that early window. But, definitely would be open to seeing more coverage of the early rounds.
You know, I got to issue a funhouse on myself. You know, as it turns out, he may actually continue doing golf into the next year and beyond, actually. So I'm reading it here on Wikipedia, which, you know, can be at my own risk. But it does say that he is expected to contribute to other CBS sports programs, including college basketball and golf coverage, for the foreseeable future and has not set a firm date for his complete retirement. And that, to me, is good to know. And thank goodness I made a mistake on that, because if I was right about that, I'd be pretty sad. And it'd be sad in two levels. It'd be sad, number one, that he's leaving altogether, And it's also sad that nobody even bothered to mention it on the telecast. If that was actually the case, it's not. Thank goodness for that. So my fault on that, guys. Let's see. I guess that's it as far as the Masters itself. Maybe we'll just get some other thoughts and we can look ahead too. Mike, we look ahead then for and look at the upcoming golf schedule. You know, here's where you start having some interesting moments. We don't have the Olympics this year, so we'll have a regular schedule. I don't remember what the scenario is with the Ryder Cup. I don't know what years those are played. I'm getting the years mixed together now as I get old. But at this point, we know that we will have, you know, we'll have that quote unquote Players Championship major, and then we have the what's the next? And then we have the Open Championship coming up after that. So. What's to look ahead? What's ahead for golf, Mike, as we get into the next few weeks and as we start the PGA Tour?
Well, it's the U.S. Open that's next, and they'll be playing that at Erin Hills in Wisconsin, which I went on their website, did like a whole thing, tried to learn a little bit about the course. It's one of those, I guess, maybe a cross between Chambers Bay and Whistling Straits. Same idea, an artificial links built. I think Erin Hills is more natural than either of those places, really. But the idea is it's supposed to be one of those linksy type deals again. So, and it's the first time that course will be hosting a major of any kind ever. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Now, I know that the USGA had wanted to get Whistling Straits into the U.S. Open rota, but Pete Dye, who designed the course, told them that, you know, June is a little bit early up there for the growing season really hasn't lasted long enough for you to be able to control the condition of the course well enough. So he kind of recommended they don't do that. So, will that be a factor? I don't know. So it'd be interesting to see how this works out again, because, you know, even though Chambers Bay was where the greens kind of blown out of proportion, probably a little bit, but it'll just be interesting to see if there's any scenarios like that again, because, you know, first time venue, sometimes it works out really well. Other times it doesn't. We'll see. Going forward, the PGA Tour, well, no, it's not a Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup is every other year. We don't have the Olympics for a few more years. One person we didn't talk about was Rory McIlroy, who did not have a blow-up round, but was, let's just say, very pedestrian. But yeah, he finished in seventh place, but by his standards, that's a pedestrian showing. Going forward, you know, this guy really needs to improve his distance control and his misses with his short clubs. Because really, that's what's killing him at Augusta, is if you're not accurate with those short irons, it doesn't matter how good you are off the tee, and you hit to the wrong part of the green, you're not going to win there, because you're just going to be on the wrong section, and all you're doing is trying to avoid a three-putt. So he's really got to get better at that. You know, and we're getting in on 3 years since he's won a major, so he's got to do something. So, we have U.S. Open at Erin Hills, so that'll be a new one for us. And then the Open Championships at Royal Birkdale, I believe. And then we have the PGA Championship in a course that we're used to seeing at for the Wells Fargo, and that's Quail Hollow. So with Rory McIlroy's track record, he'll probably be a favorite going into that. So a lot of pressure on him for that. But I guess that's kind of the rundown of the majors. We have a couple of first-time venues coming up, so it'll be interesting to see how this year plays out.
So some fresh faces in terms of the courses this year as we get into the next few majors. And that's true. The U.S. Open, always a fun time, although there's usually some shenanigans with the USGA. Then the Open Championship. It'll be interesting for sure. And we go to John for another look at what's ahead. But I'm also going to ask you this question, John, since you're in on point spreads and such. What did they do with people who bet Dustin Johnson to win the Masters? Was that a no action, or did they end up just taking the bet anyway? That's an interesting question. So what did they end up doing with that?
Well, I mean, if you were doing it online, I would assume you got your money back. Mm-hmm. In terms of you know, a live ticket at a casino. I don't know. I would assume that they would, but I mean, there could have been some like no refund policies or something, you know, that would allow them not to do it. But I think for the most part, you would get your money back for that because he didn't even tee off. And now if he had teed off and played a couple holes and then withdraw, then, you know, you're shit out of luck, as they would say. But the fact that he didn't even hit a shot, I think for the most part, you would have gotten your money back if you placed a wager on him.
Okay. That's good. That's good that's good karma, I think, because that would have been so hard if you had just, let's say you put a lot of money on it, because he was a big favorite. And gosh, that would have been devastating, really. So, boy, I don't know if I could have forgiven myself for that, if you know what I mean. So let's give it a look at what's ahead too, John. What do you see on the schedule from the next few weeks of golf?
Yeah, Mike did a nice job kind of breaking down the majors. Erin Hills is going to be interesting. It's basically, you know, they made a championship golf course on like farmland out in Wisconsin, and it definitely, I didn't go as far as like looking at the hole by hole, but I did look at some pictures, and it's, you know, it's clearly, it's very linksy, and it's definitely going to be a challenge, especially if there's wind. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays, and you know how the USGA likes to get all creative with, you know, at a new course and setting things up in a weird way. So it'll be fun to see how they do that. And then, of course, the British Open at Birkdale, that's always a tough course. I want to say the winner there, the last time they played there was like 4 or 5 over, was Padraig Harrington, if I recall. So that'll be definitely a test. And then the PGA at the Quail Hollow Club, which they usually play, the Wells Fargo event. You know, that's a tough course even for a regular tour stop. We'll see how the PGA sets it up. You know, they're more likely to give some opportunities for scoring, but that course is pretty difficult to begin with. So I'm not sure how much leeway they're going to be able to give the players, maybe a little softer greens or shorter holes or whatnot. But that's definitely going to be a tough course. And that has a really great finish, 16, 17, 18, or three great holes on that course. So certainly some drama for the finish for the PGA, and especially if it's a playoff too, that'll be phenomenal. And that's for the regular PGA Tour in the next month. I mean, it's this is pretty much a really dull time. I mean, you had a lot of the European players coming over here prior to the Masters, playing with the Florida Swing, and leading, you know, they had 2 World Golf Championships, and it, you know, led up to Augusta. And now I would imagine the fields are going to be pretty weak this week at the Harbortown RBC Classic. The field's pretty weak. I would expect the same thing at the Texas Open next week. Now, the interesting event this month is in New Orleans, the Zurich Classic. It is a team event, so it's going to be just like you would see at the Ryder Cup. Two-man teams. There's going to be 72 two-man teams, and it's going to count as an official, you know, PGA Tour event. Both guys who you know, the winning team, both will count as an official win. You'll get the, you know, FedEx Cup points, money, the whole bit. So it'll be interesting to see, number one, if anyone kind of pays maybe more attention to this event because of that format, and how the players receive it. So I guess it's kind of a novelty the first year to check out in a couple weeks. So we'll see how that goes. And then after that, again, you have the event in North Carolina that they're moving this year, obviously, as we just talked about, the PGA being played at the course, Quail Hollow. So I believe they're playing it this year at in Wilmington, some course down there, so we'll have to check that out. And then the Players is your next big event in about, you know, 5 weeks' time. So that's kind of like your brief overview of the next month on the golf schedule.
You have some highlights in there, and I'm very intrigued by the unique format coming up with the team play. That should be really, really interesting to watch. And out of curiosity, who's covering that event? Would that be a CBS or an NBC event? Usually CBS does most of them, but I was wondering.
Yeah, CBS has everything from now until the Players, and then NBC has the Players.
Okay. Very good. So let's go into potpourri and what else is on your mind, what else is going on in the world of golf, any new trends, you know, things like that. Let's go to Mike in North Jersey first for his potpourri. Anything on your mind regarding the golf world?
I guess maybe we should discuss that insane ruling in the what the hell was the dinosaur? I forget what the ANA Inspiration, whatever.
Yeah,
the first
ANA
major
Inspiration. Yep. Yeah, that's it. It's the name of some Japanese airline, I think.
The irony of that on the LPGA Tour. But anyway, yeah, before exactly. before we get into any trouble on the 10-year anniversary of the nappy-headed hose comment. yeah, it is.
Is it really?
Was 10 years ago today.
Wow.
Yes, 10 years ago today that Imus made that comment. It led to his downfall at WFAN. But, all right, so Lexi Thompson gets a 4-stroke penalty, 2 strokes for assigning an incorrect scorecard, and then 2 strokes for improperly marking a ball or putting the ball back like an inch away from where she marked it. It wasn't close to the hole. And they tell her this on the back nine of a major, and she ends up losing in a playoff after being assessed a 4-stroke penalty. Now, if you want to give her 2 strokes, fine. How do you give her 2 strokes for signing an incorrect scorecard when she signed the scorecard correctly? I don't get it. And it's just one of these, another one of these things where someone's watching on TV and they've got the thing blown up and they're watching it in slow motion, and that's how they assess the penalty. Now, why someone, and apparently they were notified during an email. Now, why don't you just pull a Hillary Clinton and delete the fucking email? What is the LPGA doing here? They just destroyed a huge chance for their... Now, obviously, the winner was So-Yun Ryu. She's a good player, and I'm sure she's very popular back in Korea. But they really just, you know, it doesn't... Now, it does help them get a little bit of publicity, because otherwise we wouldn't be discussing women's golf if this didn't happen. But in reality, it just makes the... It doesn't look good for the game. People are just like, what is going on here? How do you give a 4-stroke penalty for this? How is this fair? And how is it fitting to the crime? It's like, okay, you moved your ball an inch away. Well, that's 4 strokes. What difference does it make? Really? I mean, my God. So they just managed to destroy a major championship, basically. And, you know, you got to feel bad for Lexi Thompson. She's basically crying as she's playing. And, you know, she unfortunately loses in a playoff. So, you know, it's just your ball. You know, she probably deserved 2 strokes. Fine. Give her 2 strokes for improperly marking the ball or putting the ball back improperly. Fine. Give her 2 strokes. But still, then she wins by 2 strokes. So just a terrible job there. And... Really, the professional golf tours have to put something in place where they have a replay official or someone who watches it, and if they don't catch it, that's it. You know, there's nothing else after this. And like John brought up earlier, that we had this thing where someone tried to say that Sergio Garcia committed a rules violation with the pine straw moving. Just stop her. We can't have this anymore. And the way to whitewash it, if you want to whitewash it, is just tell the broadcast, don't fucking show the replays of it, and then nothing will ever happen. But another, you know, gaffe for the LPGA. That's 2 in 2 years where they've had 2 majors affected by, you know, basically asinine slow motion replays that basically come up with bullshit penalties, and they've affected 2 major championships. So hopefully this will serve as like some, you know, this will get all the tours moving before this 2019 rules rewrite, which is something we didn't mention today. They're having this big rules rewrite for 2019. Now, I looked at some stuff, and some stuff makes sense. Other stuff, they're not really addressing as much as they need to. But this calling in rules violations, this really needs to stop, because it's so selective on what happens. They need to just cover. They need to cover this like any other sport would. You have some situation center or whatever the hell you want to call it, and they watch everything. And if they see something, they say something, and that's it. A fan can't call in or email that someone broke the rules. No other sport does it, and it just makes golf look bad.
Yeah, the whole thing's a disgrace, Mike. I can't even believe that this sort of thing is allowed. I mean, like you said, I can't even imagine any other sport of any level that allows fans to be able to even report these things. It just doesn't seem... It just seems so shady, the whole thing. I don't even know why they would even come up with the idea that you could do this. So it's just a complete disgrace. Let's go to John. Any other thoughts you had on the Lexi Thompson situation, and any other thoughts you had on golf on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, just think about it. It'd be like some fat drunk sitting on his couch watching Monday Night Football. The refs miss a pass interference call, and he dials into the league office and is just like, oh, my God, that was, how could you miss? That was pass interference. He was grabbing the guy's jersey, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, like the referee is Paige, and he's like, oh, well, you know, after further review, a fan just called in pass interference. The ball's on the 1 yard line. I mean, could you imagine that happening? I mean, it's just so bizarre that we allow this to happen with golf. And, you know, you hit the nail right on the head with how this needs to be done. There needs to be a designated rules official watching the broadcast. As long as there's, you know, a cameras on the course where, you know, and it's being shown to the public, you know, for whatever the window is from 3 to 6 or 4 to 7 or whatever, have a rules official in a booth watching the broadcast, and they make the final determination on these sort of things and take it out of the hands of the viewers. And I mean, just like, how pathetic must your life be to like watch that and say, oh my God, she moved the ball an inch away from where, you know, where the mark would be. I better call the LPGA right now. Oh my God. You know, it just is mind boggling. But you know what I was saying the other day, she probably did move it because maybe there was a spike mark in her line, or, you know, some sort of other, you know, imperfection in the green that would have affected her putt. You know, I mean, Mike probably could admit too, like, I've done that before. I mean, you don't move it closer to the hole, but maybe you move it a little, an inch left or an inch right, so you don't have to putt through, you know, some sort of a bump in the green. I mean, we've all done it, and she probably did it too. But I mean, to have four strokes being taken away just because of some, you know, jackass calling in from their couch is ridiculous. And, you know, okay, if you want to give her the 2 strokes for the penalty, fine. I'm fine with you. But after she signs the scorecard, I mean, it should be final at that point. And really, if they were really, you know, enforcing the rules, I thought if you sign an incorrect scorecard, you're disqualified. So she really should have been disqualified if they were really, enforcing the rules. So that's what you always see, is if you sign an incorrect scorecard, that you're disqualified. And she would have with the 2-stroke penalty. So it's just a whole mess of a situation with that. And, you know, like I said, they need to take that out of the game, because, you know, a major championship should not be decided by some loser on their couch, you know, saying, oh, did the ball move an inch or didn't it move an inch? I mean, it's just ridiculous. So they definitely need to change that going forward. And it seems like it always happens in the big tournaments too, but I guess there's really nothing we can do about that. And hopefully that's addressed going forward.
Yeah, that's well said, John. It really is. And I really hope that there's some reform as we go through in this rule and in this procedure. Mike had a great system devised. Let us hope that the powers that be come up with a system just as good, if not exactly to the mirror of what Mike suggested, because it really is a really good idea. I mean, and all that Mike is doing is he's just really mirroring the systems we have in our other sports. I mean, hockey has something like that. I will say that they did make some changes to the hockey replay system that I thought were kind of unusual. Like, for example, I remember that before, they would just simply go to Situation Room and they would just tell you over the intercom or the phone or whatever, you know, what the ruling was. But now they have like this iPad mini that's involved too, which I think is unusual, because it's like, I mean, that's a tiny little screen you're using to evaluate something that happened in hockey. You kind of need a bigger screen than that if you're going to actually use a video monitor in the, but that's kind of not here or there. Anyway, that's about it. Final thoughts. We'll give it to you, Mike, first, and then we'll go wrap it up tonight. Mike, anything else you wanted to say before we go to this evening?
No, not much. Just a nice story of redemption for Sergio Garcia. You know, just really a tremendous ball striking effort was rewarded. So it's nice to see him get the monkey off the bat now going forward with him. I don't know how much more he's going to do in his career. I mean, he's already approaching 40 years old, and you kind of get the impression that with who Sergio is, that he'll be satisfied with this, and it's probably enough success for him. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what the future will hold for him? But that would be my at least inclination, that Sergio will kind of be satisfied with this, and we probably won't hear much from him. But maybe I'm wrong. If not, you know, I have nothing against Sergio. You know, he seems like a likable guy. So, you know, I wish nothing but the best for him. Justin Rose, maybe you can say that he let this one slip away a little bit. He kind of did. But, you know, he was probably a bit fortunate to get that U.S. Open. So I guess in a way it kind of balances itself out. So, and we got to see if Rory McIlroy, like I alluded to, you know, can get going again. Because really, 3 years without a major, you know, he gets stuck on this much longer. It could become more of a thing. So we got to see how he gets going. We got to see if Jordan Spieth can, you know, kind of find his moxie again, at least in mentally, at least. And we'll see how he responds to this U.S. Open.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess we got that going forward.
Yeah, and it should be some good events. I look forward to bringing that back up with you guys. I'll go give it now back to John for final thoughts.
Yeah, great tournament. You know, happy for Sergio to finally get his major. I echo those sentiments. You know, I don't know if he'll win another one, but I think his game is too solid that he'll just, like, you know, pull a Darren Clark and just, you know, drink himself into, you know, obscurity and just, you know, just like a nonstop celebration of this one tournament and, like, your career is over. I don't think he'll do that. I think he'll contend again. Will he win another major? I don't know, but certainly it'll give him the confidence to know that he finished the job and he can win one. I don't think his game is going to decline for a little bit anyway. So I think he'll be in contention for more majors. Will he win another one? I don't know. We'll see. But I definitely would think the best chance for him to win another one would be at the Open Championship. That seems to have been his best event, you know, historically in his career. So, but a great tournament. And, you know, other than that, I mean, we had a lot of great storylines in the game of golf. And we didn't even mention Tiger Woods tonight, which we shouldn't, but we didn't even mention him. And, you know, that's kind of all of the questions were, you know, when Tiger's gone, how is the game going to be? Well, I think the game is in pretty good shape right now. There's tons of young stars, you know, the veterans are, you know, right in there for winning majors as well. So golf is in a good place right now and should be a really fun year to see how the rest of these majors play out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking forward to the rest of this year too, and I'm looking forward to covering it with the two of you. Thanks very much for coming on again, fellas. It really has been a lot of fun. And let's do it again sometime where I think we'll have even more to say about the sport of golf. So guys, have a great weekend. And we'll catch up with you in a little while. Thanks so much. Take care, guys.
Okay,
right,
good
Dave,
talking to you.
We'll see you.
All right, fellas. That's it for the show. That's it for Mike in North Jersey, John in Connecticut, and I, Dave Medina. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Always good to get back in the swing of things with the golf. And we will do more of this in about a month or so. Maybe about a month and a half when we get to the U.S. Open recap. So have a great weekend and keep enjoying the baseball. But don't forget the NBA playoffs start this weekend, so enjoy that too. And the Stanley Cup playoffs are tomorrow or today if you're listening to the podcast. We'll see you next time!